Cable TV, CRN, the Cable Radio Network, the radio channel.
I am very proud to say that tonight we are being brought to you and sponsored by New Century Productions, and I want you to make sure you get a pen or a pencil, because I am going to be telling you about something that, as a matter of fact, is featured in the brand new issue of UFO Magazine, just fresh, literally off the press. You're going to be hearing all about it tonight. You're going to be reading about it in UFO Magazine, and if you're wondering now what I'm talking about, I am talking about the definitive video on one of the most important UFO cases to ever come along, and that is the case of the mysterious happening at Roswell, New Mexico, back all the way in July of 1947. The people that are bringing you this new definitive video, New Century Productions. And incidentally, if you already have your pen and pencil, I want you to write down this toll-free number where you can find out more about it, and I'm going to be telling you more about it. The number is right here in front of me, and I'm talking to the folks at New Century. They had indicated that they just might be sending some videos out here for me to give away to some lucky somebody out there in the listening audience. Believe me, you're going to be hearing more about this all around the country. And tonight, after a two-week absence, and I'm back, and I want to thank everybody that sent good well wishes to me in the last week. I was down with a pretty severe flu bug, but we're back tonight. I just about have my voice back, and I have a special guest on for your listening pleasure, somebody that some of you may have heard around the country on other radio programs, and as a matter of fact, he's been a guest with me a couple of times, a gentleman by the name of Lars Hansen. Lars is noted for his research into the Kennedy assassination, among some other things, and tonight we're going to be talking about an affidavit that he wrote that is available now. Some fascinating information in there. As a matter of fact, I've read the thing several times, and I'm sure there are going to be a lot of people that are going to have a lot of questions for him. If you would like to speak to me or my guest this evening, and you live in the 818-213 or 310 area codes. Good evening, Lars.
Good evening. It's good to be on. Good evening.
Well, this is about your third radio show that you've done today, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's been a pretty long radio day. I'm beginning to understand what the jocks have to deal with.
Well, Lars, one of the things that we were going to be speaking about this evening, we might as well get it out of the way immediately. In the last couple of weeks, there have been some absolutely fascinating reports coming in about the former head and one of the first directors of the FBI, Mr. J. Edgar Hoover, who's now been dead for, I guess, 21 years. But you've been working with some media people trying to get some additional details of this fascinating story out. Why don't you go ahead and fill us in really briefly on it?
Okay. It really is fairly startling. A lot of people, you know, in government certainly were aware of this, but I think everybody, like a lot of these major scandals, kept pretty tight-lipped about it for fear of maybe exposure of their own peccadilloes. But anyway, the story that finally has emerged publicly was that J. Edgar Hoover was gay. Maybe it was the right time with all the other furor about gays in the military to bring this out, but he, his number two man at the FBI for many years and his live-in roommate for at least 30 years, I guess, Clyde Tolson, was his boyfriend also, and that he, according to a new book coming out by Anthony Summers, who's written about Marilyn Monroe and other books related to the Kennedys, I guess, that some of his sources have brought out that Hoover was apparently photographed in the course of one evening with his boyfriend, and that those photographs were used to blackmail him, according to Summers' book, I guess, and according to a PBS Frontline special about a week and a half ago, that he was being blackmailed by the mafia to go easy on them.
And there's also some indications that the other intelligence agencies, such as CIA and its forerunner, the OSS, may have used these compromising photographs. Now, I'm sure that there are a lot of people out there listening that would be wondering just what in the world that has to do with the subject of UFOs. And actually, on the surface, we have to say that it really doesn't have a lot to do with that particular subject. However, what it does have to do with is to show that, in fact, there are people within government, within the intelligence services, and within various law enforcement organizations that, in fact, can keep secrets, not only for years, but literally for decades, and they can play pretty rough if they have a need to. And of course, that would segue directly into the UFO field.
Well, in fact, that's absolutely right, Don. But there actually, as it turns out, is a connection of sorts, because I've been aware of this for 3 years as a result of some of my dealings with one of the self-proclaimed UFO experts who, a little over 3 years ago, was quite anxious to share a tape recording that he had made of a phone conversation he was having.
Thank you, Lars. I thought it was going to be another 5 or 6 minutes before we got to that.
Well, we'll just cut right to the chase here. But at any rate, because I think this is important, that after this story, or as this story was beginning to emerge in the national media, it came to my attention because I had been threatened by several times by one of the people involved in that conversation.
You're talking about physically threatened.
Physically threatened, and threatened with legal charges and so forth, because I had been a recipient of this audio tape. I'm certainly not going to play it tonight and risk, you know, further action, but I think it's important for people to know that this individual, whose name is Gordon Novell, he was appeared as one of the sources on the Frontline special, and apparently is one of the sources for Summer's book.
And not only that, but I don't know if you're aware of it, the new issue of Vanity Fair also has an extensive article in there on that particular case with Hoover, and Novell is quoted extensively.
Very interesting. Well, anyone who just has tuned in is wondering what the ties to UFO are. What I find very interesting, in addition to a lot of his other adventures or exploits, or however you would categorize them, meaning Novell, as it happened, he turned up in Las Vegas a little over 3 years ago once Bob Lazar had come out into the public eye, and was extremely interested in meeting with him and finding out what he knew about this advanced, what I call advanced propulsion technology. And it was in the course of this conversation with Lear, he was trying to enlist Lear's help.
You're talking about John Lear.
John Lear, the alleged UFO expert, into helping him get close to Bob Lazar. Lear had shared this conversation, which he had audio taped surreptitiously with me, and I have held in confidence up until very recently because of that fact. But inasmuch as Novell was questioning Lear about Lazar's knowledge, Lear, in the meantime, was questioning Novell about his personal knowledge of the Kennedy assassination, the subsequent cover-up.
Okay, Lars, now we're going to have to take a very quick break right here, and when we come back, I want to talk more about the Kennedy cover-up, and also, I would like you to tell the audience who exactly is Gordon Novell. So just stand by, we'll be back in just a moment.
UFO report. From the files of the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, strange stories of strange things in our skies. This is Hal Starr with a report on unidentified flying objects, brought to you every day, Monday through Friday. We frequently hear an explanation of why no UFO or flying saucer has ever been found intact, that they never have mechanical failures. A look at why the explanation doesn't hold up in this detailed account of a landing and apparent repair of a large disc-shaped UFO on November 25th, 1964, only very recently come to light. Mrs. Mary Merriweather and her mother-in-law were still up late one night while the husband and father-in-law were on a hunting trip, and about 12:30 a.m. they noticed this strange light near their rural home north of New Berlin, Connecticut. Mrs. M. and her mother-in-law watched from a high vantage point next to the house as the thing settled to the ground nearby amid a strange, loud humming sound and emitting an almost blinding bright light similar to a mercury vapor lamp. They urged the dog, an English Springer who normally loves to rush outside, to join them, but he refused, staying in the house and shivering in fear. Then, as they watched in utter fascination, some humanoid creatures stepped out of the alien craft, and we'll tell you what happened next, right after these words of importance. While Mrs. M. and her mother-in-law stood, mouths agape, about a half dozen man-shaped creatures, dressed in what looked like a skin diver's wetsuit, started moving under the craft and performed some sort of work. Mrs. M and her mother-in-law watched intently through binoculars and estimated by the nearby shrubbery that these creatures were between 6.5 and 8 feet tall. As the aliens worked, another craft flashed down and landed near the first one, and another half dozen similar man-like creatures got out and joined the first group. They all were working on what looked like a heavy, wire-like cable, cutting it into exact lengths. Over 4 hours elapsed, and the aliens were obviously getting impatient to complete their work. When they finished, and then they lifted a box-like affair back into place under the crippled UFO, a box they handled very carefully. Soon, both ships took off almost straight up, in a flash, disappearing in seconds at about 5 a.m. The next day, Mrs. M. went to the spot in daylight and found two sets of triangular impressions in bare ground where the two ships had rested. These triangles were 20 feet to a side, approximately, and the holes left were 14 inches wide and about 4 inches deep. When Mrs. M.'s husband returned, he confirmed the marks that were left, and the two of them found a piece of the cut cable about 3 inches long. It appeared to be very finely shredded aluminum, but oddly, it wouldn't crumple or crease as aluminum should, and remained intact when the covering or insulation, a sort of a dark brown paper toweling material, was removed. Realizing the scientific value of the artifact, Mrs. M. put the cable aside in her home, awaiting an investigator's visit. But when she went to get it, it had disappeared. And that's UFO Report. Stories from the files of the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization and brought to you every day, Monday through Friday. Until next time, this is Hal Starr, and keep an eye on the sky.
We are back. Lars, Gordon Novell, who is he? What can you tell us about
him? Very, very interesting character. Anyone who has done any kind of serious work on the Kennedy assassination and the subsequent cover-up very quickly encounters this name. Novell was about the same age and apparently at that time was a dead ringer for Lee Harvey Oswald, according to many sources, or at least a number of sources, including his ex-wife. He may have actually impersonated Oswald on several occasions. He was actively involved, by his own admission, in sabotaging the investigation of the assassination by District Attorney Jim Garrison on orders of the White House and with the support of the Johnson White House during that time. He was hired by Charles Colson, one of Nixon's men, to degauss the Watergate tapes. He takes credit for actually engineering the acquittal of John DeLorean in that scandal, and his name surfaced in Los Angeles a few years ago in relation to the Vicki Morgan sex tapes that people may be aware of that Larry Flint got a hold of. He's been involved in a number of other interesting activities, but those are certainly some of the more
Well, he has been listed as a true electronics whiz kid. Do you think that was one of the reasons he was trying to get next to purported physicist and UFO fellow Bob Lazar?
Sure.
To find out if, in fact, he did have access to advanced technology, perhaps technology not from this planet?
Yeah, there's no question about it. As a matter of fact, when I spoke with Novell after he calmed down and so forth, he made it very clear that he was extremely interested in that type of technology, but he was also just as emphatic about that he did not believe that Lazar was for real, that he either had been shown some things and was being deliberately misled and didn't really understand the physics, or that he was making it up. He, at this point in time, this was just a little over a month ago, he remains fairly convinced now that Lazar really doesn't know what he's talking about. And I'm not the expert on that subject. I'll leave it to the other UFO experts to in terms of Lazar's credibility.
Okay, my guest tonight is Lars Hansen, noted Kennedy assassination researcher and author of something called UFOs, Aliens, and Ex-Intelligence Agents. Who's Fooling Whom? The Inside Story of John Lear and Bill Cooper. And Lars, we have somebody right now on line one. We have Greg from Van Nuys on United Artists. Good evening, Greg. Did you have a question for my guest?
Yes, I have a couple of questions. Lars, David Winkley was on the Larry King show, might have been a year ago or so, and somebody called up and asked him about the Kennedy assassination. He rather smugly and complacently said, Well, I never saw any evidence to dispute the Warren Commission report, but if there was some and someone brought it to me, I'd be glad to take a look at it. And I happen to think about the time, my God, what would we have known about Watergate if Woodward and Bernstein had taken this sort of attitude? And why do these noted broadcast journalists and other journalists take this attitude?
Wise, take it away.
That's a very good question. It could go in hours in response, but so many of these people, they owe their careers to their willingness to continue with the cover-up. Dan Rather's probably the best example, and Walter Cronkite's right behind him. The official story was put out. A lot of these people, Dan Rather in particular, made his career based on that by giving false testimony. The implications are so staggering about the planning and the orchestration, not only of the assassination, but of the long-range cover-up, that these people dare, it's almost like religious tradition. They dare not question it, and it's just very, very unfortunate. The very few who have dared to question very often get demoted or moved out to Lower Slobovia to finish their reporting career. There's a lot of pay involved here, a lot of payoffs, and a lot of intimidation, outright smear. So it's a very difficult road to take particularly if you already are in that sort of position.
Uh-huh. Now, there was some, after the Oliver Stone movie came out, there was some new legislation introduced to open up the files. Do you know anything about that progress, and is there any chance of that actually coming about? That'd be my last question.
It's a good question. I'm not an expert on the files because I think whatever might be there is pretty effectively sanitized at this point. I was just reading today, for example, one of my colleagues who's been very active in trying to get those files released, pointing out how even once again, it's been the most recent order is to have it delayed for another 3 years. The Watergate tapes, which have been gone over time and time again for years, Nixon is still fighting the release of those tapes.
Well, Lars, if in fact there was anything in those files that could be embarrassing to anyone still living or to any of the agencies that we've mentioned, I think you and I can both safely presume that those files would have been sanitized 20 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. They've been sanitized. And let me just give you one example. There was an investigator, I believe his name was Fred Alvarez, on the House Select Committee, who essentially went down and investigated and wrote a 290-page report proving that the claims that they had made about Oswald going to the Soviet embassy and so forth were all bogus, that it absolutely was not Oswald. That was not only not permitted to even be discussed in relation to the final report that the House Select Committee issued, it has never been discussed or permitted to surface even now.
Okay, well, look, Greg, I want to thank you for your call.
Thanks a lot, guys. Great program.
Thank you, and keep listening.
Okay, will do.
And for you folks that are sitting out there, my guest this evening is Lars Hansen. My name is Don Ecker. I'm the host of UFOs Tonight, right here on the Cable Radio Network. And if you'd like to speak to myself or my guest, Lars Hansen, and you're in the 818-213 or 310 area codes. And of course, if the toll-free number is, in fact, busy, you can still reach us at the other number, 818-35. The things that have been floating around the UFO field for about 5 years now, and I think we both safely can presume when it started, how it started, and by whom. But one of the bits of disinformation that's been going about is the fact that one of the reasons that JFK was, in fact, assassinated was because he was going to release the information on the secret government UFO/ET cover-up. How do you respond to that when people ask you about that?
Well, that's surprising, Don. I'm asked that pretty frequently on programs like this, even earlier today. All I can say is, of all, each and every one of the truly dedicated and genuine researchers and investigators, none, to my knowledge, not one, many people who have unearthed all kinds of important details, not one of them pushes that line at all, other than...
But you hear it literally all over the world.
Sure,
literally all over the world.
Well,
I've just gotten recently a magazine from Australia. And periodically, every two or three issues in this magazine, and UFO magazine in this magazine has a trade out, so we get all their issues. You will read this tripe that JFK was assassinated because he was going to expose the UFO cover. I mean, absolute garbage, but yet it still is perpetuated. How is this being done?
Well, I think it's a giant piece of disinformation, which, you know, as your magazine has reported on repeatedly, there are a lot of very powerful psychological points that can be manipulated by various intelligence agencies that are involved in promoting disinformation, and certainly they can feed information like this to certain individuals who then go out and spout it, and the public, you know, is always anxious for a new angle on it. But unfortunately, the most important points get lost in the shuffle. That is that, for example, one thing we do know, any good investigator on the subject knows, is that the only aliens that we know that Kennedy was about to expose were the hundreds of Nazis who were brought into this country and ferreted out of Germany through the rat line to set up intelligence networks in South Africa and South America and the United States, and that he had said specifically that he was going to splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces.
And that was from those Nazis were from the Galen organization.
Well, most of them. A number of them were also brought into the U.S. Army Historical Division. Matter of fact, the Warren Report was written by a man named Otto Winnicker, who was one of 26 official historians for the Nazi Third Reich. I mean, that is an indisputable fact. So in terms of aliens that Kennedy might have been willing to expose, that would be the first place I'd look. But you find, you know, we don't have enough time to go into all these details tonight, but you find in the course of the investigation that there were a number of very real, very genuine groups that we're all familiar with, like the Mafia, like the anti-Castro Cubans, like some wealthy Dallas oil men, and like some very, very disgruntled intelligence officials and agents who essentially combine in a rather intricate plot to eliminate him and then put one false sponsor and one patsy up after another.
Okay, we've got to take another quick break, Lars, and when we come back, we have some folks waiting on the telephone to talk to you. So stand by, we'll be right back. Are back with Lars. And Lars, we have Dana in Palmdale on Jones Cable waiting to speak to you. Good evening, Dana.
Yes, hi. Hi, Lars. Hi, John. I'm originally from Boston, and my parents met John Kennedy when he was running for Congress back in the late 40s. And I myself have read, like, Rest of Judgment and Crossfire and High Treason, and I even saw the Bill Cooper film where the driver, William Grier.
Oh, thank you for mentioning that, Dana, because that is something that Lars and I are going to be speaking about.
Okay, well, I saw that in Santa Monica, giving a lecture down there, where the driver apparently, supposedly, turns around and fires at Kennedy. Now, what the question I'm going to ask is, there seems to be, you know, so many theories, well, the original by Alan Spector and Gerald Ford, who mentioned the, you know, the magic bullet that did the somersaults in midair, defying laws of physics. Lars, I wanted to ask, what basically is your conclusion? Was it some kind of a hitman dressed as a Dallas police officer, as we hear, or what do you think happened?
Well, it's really almost too complicated to try to go into this evening over the in this program, but let me just clarify one aspect. That film, I've had to do this many times, but that film, that video that you saw that Bill Cooper was showing was one that I made myself, which, frankly, I've explained this over and over. It was, first of all, a very, very crude research effort. It was thrown together in about 45 minutes. It was a theory that had been advanced by two men that I had met independent of each other. We had, just to save the poor quality film that he had from the National Archives, we transferred it to video, and I put the narration on there. And at the time I made it, I was in such a rush. I had done this, you know, instead of saying it looks like it or appears that or a case could be made that, I said this is what happened. I very mistakenly entrusted a copy of that to John Lear shortly after I met him, because I thought that he was really sincere about trying to get to the bottom of that. And instead, he gave it to Bill Cooper, and the rest, as they say, is history. He used it as a shill to sensationalize his lectures. The man has done virtually no serious research into the Kennedy assassination. It's one wild claim after another, and just incredibly irresponsible.
And because of that tape, Lars, I think we can safely say that this was now setting a new stage for a new urban myth, because I have no doubt literally hundreds and hundreds of thousands, perhaps even more, people have heard this theory and may have seen this tape. And when you put it together, what was the reasoning and the purpose behind that?
Well, I had met a year before I did this, I had met one individual. I was doing some research at the University of California, Santa Barbara Library, and I happened to meet a man. His name is Perry Adams. And we were talking about JFK, and one thing led to another, and he mentioned this theory. As a matter of fact, he and his partner, respected photographic technician by the name of Fred Newcomb, had written a manuscript of about 350 pages called Murder from Within, and that was one of their contentions, was that the driver turned around and fired a weapon. I remember at the time, this was back in 86, laughing to myself and thinking, boy, now I've really heard it all. And as a matter of fact, I remember thinking, gee, next thing you know, they're going to say the aliens did it, and little did I know what would happen. But about a year later, I was producing a public event on Central America up in San Luis Obispo, and through various contacts, I met another individual who goes by the name of David Evans, who had spent 15 years investigating that particular angle, and I think is probably still convinced that that's what happened. So it was. He showed me all of the rest of his evidence that he had compiled, the various photographs and so forth, and there seemed to me enough compelling indications that it was worth investigating. So he and I very quickly transferred the film onto video, and I had put this thing together. As a matter of fact, that particular evening with the narration, because I was going to a meeting of some people who possibly could have underwritten a serious investigation, I felt that there was enough indication there that it was certainly bore looking into. I mean, one thing we know for certain is that William Greer, the driver, did step on the brakes and brought the car almost to a complete halt. After
and that was in violation of every
regulation.
Every regulation and every bit of security, wasn't
even,
it?
Even the route of the motorcade itself, of course, was in total violation. And there was another very compelling piece of evidence, which was a bullet slug that ended up on the opposite side of Elm Street from where Zapruder was taking the film, surrounded by what apparently were bits of brain tissue, and we were trying to figure out where did this come from. There were rumors and reports when Garrison was doing his investigation in 69 that there might have been a shooter in the sewer, actually in the manhole, and I was there 2 years ago in Dallas, and you can still lift the manhole cover off and climb down in there. There's an opening in the sidewalk. So there were a variety of possibilities, and that's what we were trying to really get to the bottom of. And long before we were able to undertake that sort of thorough investigation, as I say, I mistakenly entrusted a copy of this tape to John Lear. He gave it to Cooper, and next thing you know, it's all...
And the rest, in fact, is history.
And when I tried to confront him and straighten this out, Lear started putting really ridiculous messages about it on his answering machine, and Cooper started accusing me of being a CIA agent.
All right, Lars, that's something I want to cover, but we've got to take the half-hour break right now
And
do some commercials for our wonderful sponsors, so I want you to stand by. Dana, did that answer your question, or did you have another one?
No, basically, I think it answered. I think what the powers that be are trying to do is giving us all these layers of the onion skin, and you pick your theory.
There you go. Okay,
yes.
We've got to take the break. Gentlemen, we'll be back. Back. Lars.
Yes.
Okay. You were down in Dallas. You tracked and traced around those streets. What is your bottom line on this? Because I know this is one of the things that you have been noted for as far as your research is concerned. But I want to take this then from what occurred in Dallas and with this tape, which has now literally been around the world probably three times, and segue it into your affidavit that you have available.
Yes, well, which question did you, as far as the bottom line, I mean, I
the bottom line of what's your research and what do you feel actually occurred back in 1963?
Well, it's, as I said earlier, it definitely was a very well orchestrated, triangulated fire scenario. There's still some debate as far as where the riflemen were precisely and who those riflemen were. I mean, the people will quibble over that probably for the next 50 years, but the fact that there was a very high-level cabal involving a number of different groups, elements of the CIA, elements of defense intelligence.
In other words, you give absolutely not even the slightest shred of credence to the lone gunman theory.
Lone gunman is an absolute farce. How they ever got away with that from day one to right up to now, almost 30 years later, is just absolutely unbelievable. I mean, it's such a profound insult to the intelligence of the American people and the world community. I mean, everybody over in Europe knew immediately what had happened. One of the best books ever written on the assassination was actually a French book called Farewell America, and it was very aptly titled because the fact that we let these maniacs get away with us live for so many years is just absolutely befuddling. But
well, what's even as almost fascinating is how this segues into the UFO research arena, because there, in fact, have been clear lines drawn between the assassination and the UFO thing. And I think much of it may, in fact, have to do with the fact that intelligence services are so obviously connected with not only the Kennedy assassination event, but also the event that's been going on at least since 1947 as far as unidentified flying objects.
Absolutely, Don. And you see, what's interesting about it is in some case you see a lot of those same characters that the people that are promoting that line, or you certainly see some very real connections. And I think it needs to be brought out. The reason why I put together this affidavit, it's about a 120-page statement, personal statement by me, and about 250 pages of supporting documentation, is that, you know, as a result of some limited dealings over about a two-year period of time with John Lear and about several hours of time that I spent with Bill Cooper, this monumental lie and distortion got going. I mean, to the point where in Lear's case, he actually fabricated different documents and letters concerning me that really are borderline criminal, quite frankly, which I've reproduced in the affidavit. And of course, Cooper, when I confronted him with his fraudulence regarding this videotape, how he acquired it and how he was promoting it and so forth, you know, he publishes a book called, why even promote it? At any rate, publishes a book where he spends three or four pages accusing me of being a CIA agent because I dared to confront him and expose his falseness.
Well, don't feel like the Lone Ranger, Lars. I did a two-part expose on him in the pages of UFO Magazine.
And you turned out to be a CIA agent too, huh?
Ever since.
Well, at any rate, you know, when I knew that a lot of this stuff was going on, and I really was very despairing about it because I realized once this tape had gotten out and the distortion was afoot, there seemed to be very little I could do to try to counteract it, but realizing that the pen is still mightier than the sword, I sat down, composed this document, and did a number of radio programs. And one of the key factors that compelled me to do that, besides Cooper's fraudulence, was when I began to hear that Lear apparently was making comments publicly to certain people about his desire to have me killed. Now, I think it's, you know, I don't want to get into the realm of slander, but these are provable facts that Lear has been a contract pilot for the CIA for many years, and while he talks about all this, these different so-called discoveries and UFO-related information, he's not telling you that one of the key things that his flight group did over in the secret war in Laos was fly drugs back and forth for the CIA, that he's been involved in shipping weapons all over the world for on contract for the CIA. Probably most notably, and I think people ought to be aware of this, he and his flight crew flew 600 tons of Soviet weapons into Somalia in 1977 to set up this little shooting match that, you know, where hundreds and hundreds of Somalians have died of starvation and gunshots and so forth that they're still having to contend with, and a lot of American lives are at stake. But you never hear about that. You never hear one word about any of that.
Well, how did somebody with that type of background and credentials, in your opinion, and for those people that may not be aware of it, enter so prominently into the UFO research arena back in 1987-88 with a background in intelligence activities, even if it in fact only was as a contract pilot? I mean, wouldn't that be suspect at the outset as a possible or probable disinformation ploy?
Well, it certainly should be, but you unfortunately should never underestimate the public's willingness to be deceived. It's amazing. I mean, even after I distributed this affidavit and various other people have written about fraudulence on the part of both of these men, they're still sought after for these various UFO expositions and whatnot. It just absolutely baffles me. But, you know, in Lear's case, I mean, in Cooper's case, we know that a lot of his claimed credentials are just, you know, absolutely fraudulent, that he, as a petty officer, was briefing the commander-in-chief of the Pacific Fleet is highly doubtful.
Perhaps emptying ashtrays and taking out the empty styrofoam coffee cups?
Setting up, you know, video screen or whatever, film screens. But in the case of Lear, you have to give a man credit for the fact that he came from a very illustrious family involved not only in aviation development and so forth and still to this day, but his father, as I understand from additional research, was involved in some top secret, well, his company was one of the largest defense contractors in the world for a number of years, and was actually involved in electromagnetic gravity.
And he, as a matter of fact, his father, William Lear, who of course is the man responsible for the Lear jet, had a great interest and fascination into the field of unidentified flying objects. As a matter of fact, one of my personal heroes in this field going back over 35 years ago was Major Donald Kehoe, who in fact knew Bill Lear and mentioned Lear rather prominently in several of his research books. Lars, we're going to have to take a quick break and we will be back. Speaking of videotapes, and we are back. Lars, okay. Your affidavit now has been out for about how long? You have revised it recently, haven't you?
Well, a little while back. It's been out for about a year and a half. It was essentially my definitive statement as far as my dealings with both of these men, my version of events. Just for the record, I'm, as you know, Don, involved in investigating much more nuts and bolts situations like large-scale drug smuggling, weapons smuggling, bank scandals, that sort of thing. I didn't want to be closely associated with the UFO field, but as a result of the actions of these two men, I felt that I really had no choice but to address the issue, hopefully once and for all. I guess I should have known better. But a lot of the things, that, as it turns out, that I wrote about in there are, you know, coming up much more out into the forefront now. Certainly a lot has emerged, a great deal more has emerged about the Kennedy assassination that I wrote about, and I had documents in there, the Nazi connection to that tragic event.
Well, wouldn't you agree, though, that there is no longer what could be considered, Lars, to be a clear-cut demarcation line? The line from many of these activities that you wrote about in your affidavit, and, for example, what is now occurring in the UFO field, the many reports of disinformation campaigns that have been run on UFO researchers, not to mention the disinformation campaigns that have been run on things like Watergate, Iran-Contra, the BCCI banking scandal, the INSLA computer software thefts, the murders of people that have gotten too close to some of these, such as Danny Casolaro. I've seen a clear-cut demarcation line between this. In the last issue of UFO Magazine, I started a report on the Wackenhut Security Corporation, which I now have part two in the new issue just going out. And these folks are some of the very same individuals that clear-cut cases of criminality can be, in fact, traced to them, but yet they have numerous and myriad contracts with government agencies such as the Department of Energy. They have been out there, their personnel are guarding immigration naturalization service things. They've been involved in illegal weapons productions and shipments out of sovereign Indian nations out here, for example, in California. And they are the folks that are automatic weapon toting people around Area 51 down in Nevada where the purported UFO alien technology is being stored.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Don. You're absolutely right in terms of the overall effort, the extensive national security state that seems to be growing up in the midst of it here, and the vast extent of disinformation that has been utilized. And that's very unfortunate because important subjects, important fields of study like ufology and certainly getting to the bottom, getting to the real truth of the Kennedy assassination, get kind of swirled up and jumbled up into the mix, and you know, it gets to the point where nobody knows what to believe. And meanwhile, people like Casolaro, as you mentioned, who get too close to the truth very often, you know, wind up dead.
Well, one of the people that I mentioned in the first article on Wackenhut that I did, which in fact you read when you were down here, now has been keeping time, from what I understand, with UFO researcher John Lear, and that individual is Robert Booth Nichols, who was fingered very prominently things to do with the Casolaro investigation and Casolaro's murder, according to a number of published reports.
That's correct. He was mentioned as a, you know, kind of a shadowy source for Casolaro while he was doing his work, and I understand certain magazine articles recently have fingered him. I certainly know some of the private conversations of amongst investigators that he is massively implicated in the killing of Casolaro. And as I say, that it reported that John Lear has been associating with him recently. So I find that extremely disturbing. I think that I don't really pay that much attention to what Lear is doing these days. I filed the affidavit primarily as a life insurance policy. As you know, Don, I had a very close friend in Los Angeles who you met briefly, who was also died very mysteriously the very same weekend in 1991
as Casolaro. Chris DuPont.
And I consequently, I released my affidavit just very shortly afterward because I figured if anything, I've been tracking a lot of these operations for some time myself, and I figured if anything happened, I at least wanted to have the satisfaction wherever I would end up in knowing that people would know exactly where to start looking if I had one of these type of accidents. And I think that certainly Lear and Cooper and a few of these other people got the message loud and clear, but it just it amazes me that they still continue on and they're invited to all these UFO events and people are still taken in by the what I consider their dog and pony show, but no one ever asks these hard questions. I would be very concerned about somebody who made a
little... Now, Lars, wait a minute. Almost no one ever asks hard questions.
Yeah. Well, you know what I'm saying. As far as the rank and file, the people that pay their $50 or whatever to attend these events and sit in rapt awe.
Well, how can somebody get a copy of your affidavit?
Well, probably.
I mean, this is a good time. This is a good time to mention it.
Well, sure. It's I have kind of wound down my activities with that. I've been concentrating on a couple other very involved projects, Don. So I would say the best way would just be to contact your radio program. Maybe you can give the people the address and so forth, and just handle it that way. I'm very involved in a couple other investigations. So at this point, I'm not real actively involved in marketing it, but certainly anybody who would like to get a copy, I think the best way would really be to contact you.
Okay, well, if they're interested, and what are you charging for it, Lars? $25?
The affidavit is $25. It's been reviewed now, I guess, in three different magazines. There'll be another one coming out very soon called Steam Shovel Press. Pretty favorably. No one has said that it's not worth the money. It's,
well, as a matter of fact, it was reviewed in UFO Magazine.
Yes, that was the first one. And
what, $350 shipping and handling?
That's correct, Don.
Okay, so $25 and $350 shipping and handling. If you would like to get a copy of Lars' affidavit, and Lars, that's called UFOs, Aliens, and Ex-Intelligence Agents, Who's Fooling Whom?
Correct.
The Inside Story of John Lear and Bill Cooper. Well, you really keep your title short. Okay.
Well, I figured if people like a short read, if they just read the title page, they'd get the gist.
Okay, $25 and $350 shipping and handling. If you're interested in that, I'll tell you how to go about getting that. Send it to UFO Affidavit. That's UFO Affidavit, Post Office Box. And with that, Lars, we're getting down to the last couple of moments of the show, so we have got to take another commercial break. We'll be right back. And the little people are back. Lars, we've got about 4 minutes left on the program. What's the bottom takeout on this? Now, I realize that you've been on a lot of radio programs. You've talked to a lot of people about your various types of research. But what's your bottom line on the overall UFO mystery? I know that you've been around this a while, even though you're not a UFO researcher. What do you think is going on?
Well, Don, I think somebody with even half a brain, I mean, anyone who's paying attention knows that these sightings and these encounters have gone, reports of them going back hundreds and hundreds of years. So I think, one thing we can pretty well accept is as a fact that the craft do exist. Exactly where they come from apparently remains to be proven. But whether they're of extraterrestrial origin or just the products of extremely advanced research, and certain agencies of this government or international governments are using deliberate disinformation to bring in this alien aspect, I'm not prepared to say. I'm not the expert on it. But unfortunately, I think that whatever the truth is, Don, it probably is of such a magnitude, and the implications are so profound that these people have a, when I say these people, the people who pretty much control the governments of the United States and the world, which, you know, have been discussed at length in many books and on many programs at the highest levels, if in fact we are and have been visited by extraterrestrial civilizations, I think these people are very concerned about controlling their fiefdom here. And so they will manipulate these pressure points as often as possible.
I think those are some excellent points you made, Lars. And you know, it never fails to absolutely surprise and amaze me how people will sneer at this subject, really with not having any background or information in it, not realizing the amount of information that is available. Now, for example, this UFO video that we've been talking about tonight, the UFO secret, the Roswell crash. When I got the copy of this, I was absolutely surprised at the amount of information that had gone into this and the people that had been interviewed that showed that without a doubt something of such a magnitude of strangeness happened. It's almost beyond the pale. And the military, even to this day, and the intelligence services are covering this thing up, and people are not seeing it for what it is. I just recently heard some people from JPL and from several other NASA organizations on a radio program here in Los Angeles talking about the high-resolution microwave survey. It used to be called SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. They don't call it that anymore. I guess they don't want to have the association of little green men or gray men. But when somebody mentioned UFOs and Roswell, these guys just literally laughed their heads off. And I can't believe that they are that stupid. They have to realize that there is something there, but yet they have an unwillingness to take a look at it. And it's beyond me why. I thought science was the idea of finding out what these mysteries are, not laughing at them and pushing them away because they don't fit into your comfortable little perception of reality.
Well, you know, that didn't begin with, even with Copernicus, a man who's credited with the heliocentric theory, who refused to even let his findings be published until after his death, that the planets actually revolved around the sun instead of the other way around, as everybody thought at that time, back, I think, in the 1500s. So, you know, this has been with us for a long time. I guess,
well, the contemporaries of Galileo even refused to look through his telescope.
Yeah, not at all surprising. So it's something we've had to contend with for years. Lear made a good comment in one of his talks where he said that you know, the government has taken turned ridicule into an art form, and it certainly has been very, very much the case. But since we're running out of time, maybe just a good illustration of how this manipulation can take place is an incident that I guess you were actually a witness to, where Lear was at a meeting of ex-intelligence officers in Las Vegas a few years ago, and without my permission, showed this Kennedy videotape, and then asked the people, this is just, you know, 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, if they would have been ordered, how many people would have been willing to participate? And
killing Kennedy.
Yeah, I observed 4 of these ex-spooks putting their hands up, and surprisingly, a couple of them were female.
Well,
Lars Weir.
Thank you very much. Hope you enjoyed this edition of Don Echo Live.
Well, that's it, Guy. We are out of time.
Okay.
Lars, I want to thank you very, very much for being my guest this evening. We certainly are going to do this again. It's always some fascinating information when you're on. Stand on the line, and I'll be speaking to you briefly after the show. Thank you much.
Thank you, Don.
Okay, that's it for another week. I want to give you a little hint, something that's coming up. As a matter of fact, in the new issue of UFO, we have a story on it. It's called The Pentacle Letter. Ever hear of it? Well, if you haven't, I trust that you're going to want to hear about it. Jacques Vallée mentioned it in his new book, Forbidden Science. I got a copy of it. It's in the magazine. It was something that happened right before the famous Robertson Scientific Panel. Stay tuned. You're going to want to find out more about it with another special guest next week.